Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sorry, £16.6 million, whatever the US dollar equivalent was at the time. And it was on a 1998 Volvo estate car.
Well, maybe you need therapy if your father's registration plate is GAY777L on a blue Capri.
So then you go back and you're still having these discussions about the red leather. So then you say, oh, fuck it, do the boot in full red leather.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number... Batsman, raise your bats to the crowd. Episode 50, not out. What an achievement for these, well, let's say weird
cricketers.
We're all weirdos, but we like being here and talking crap about cars. And there is, I think, no thornier subject in the world of car ownership in the UK than this one. Maybe that's why we waited so long to be brave enough to discuss with you the issue of personalised or private number plates. I'm going to grab my hard hat, go and hide under a rock, and leave it to Edward Lubbock to tell me what he thinks about private number plates.
Well, in the back of my car with a cigarette lighter, I grew up in the motor trade, and actually, some of them weren't private number plates. They were just the number plates fitted to those cars, and they that were brand when they were brand new that my grandfather was selling.
Nice.
So, for me, the number plates always had a bit of a story, and it, whether it's attached to that person or that particular car, and a lot of people call their cars by their number plates. That's how, like, yeah. Cut 7 would be a good example of the yeah. Jaguar racing car. You know, you don't refer to it as the chassis number, it's Cut 7. So I don't have a problem with them like you, Christopher. There's also the humorous side of number plates. And I told you, growing up as a child going to the British Grand Prix, there was a Maserati 4200 in the BRDC car park there with a very pretty blonde lady that drove it, and her registration number was Love 69. That always made me chuckle. In Notting Hill, there's a BMW IQ, and the registration is G6 Pot, but they've obviously moved, no, sorry, G5 Pot, but they've moved the 5 slightly closer to the B, so it's G Spot. And it's always parked on the same bit of road, but it does make you smile when you drive past these things. And
it does make you smile.
The one other thing that I'm going to just run through here, some highlights of values of these plates, not just in the UK, but around the world. 250 sold in the UK to a famous car dealer in the UK for £520,000. In Hong Kong, someone bought the letter R for 25 million Hong Kong dollars. In the UAE, someone bought P7 in Dubai for 12 million pounds.
Was that on a Lamborghini Countach or something like that?
No, it was just the registration number.
Because you'd have that on a...
Why P7? Do you know why is that important there?
Well, it's actually just shows a 7, but the way the plates are, it's a P over here under Dubai. Yeah. Then it's
the 7. Original tyre, P7.
Yeah, and so and obviously American plates always have a bit of humour because not many people have personalised plates, but people that are real car geeks love to have them. And if the perfect plate's gone, then they start to try and make up some sequence of letters and numbers to do something. But you can imagine in Manhattan seeing the registration number New York written on a number plate, what that would be worth. And apparently that has been for sale. And in America, you can't swap number plates between people. So they sort of stay on the car. So you'd have to title the car in your name and you could maybe move it from the same owner. But New York was for sale for $16.6 million or whatever the £16.6 million, whatever the US dollar equivalent was at the time. And it was on a 1998 Volvo estate car. Because you obviously had to buy the car to get the plate. Anyway, there's a little bit of intel on there. I have some private plates. I'm not ashamed of it. And Chris, I've even lent one to you.
I know. You're wrong to say that I have a problem with them. I don't. I'm hugely conflicted, and I'll tell you why. And I think this will resonate with some of you and some of...
Fine. I will screen grab some of your past comments because you were quite brutally honest on Friday when we were setting these topics.
I think where you grow up and who you grow up with and their... So your parents' responses to these things do linger.
Yeah, that's a good
My
point.
Late father was a very Victorian man, and he thought these things were a bit ostentatious, and he thought a certain type of person wanted to draw attention to themselves, and he didn't like that sort of person.
Slightly vulgar?
Yes, he would use the V word. And of course, so that stuck with me. And he left my life many, many years ago, but I still think of him sitting there looking down at me, and I want to please him. It's a bit late for that, given some of the things I've done in my life, I think. But I think when I see them, I instinctively want to be my father and go, oh, how vulgar. But actually, some of them I really like. They do make me smile. I'm totally susceptible to the joy of a good number plate. But I don't know anything that's more finely balanced than the plate on the car. Because it's never a little bit wrong. It's either absolutely right or it's absolutely wrong for me.
Is this the private plate you're talking about?
No, both types, actually. Yeah. The personalised plate, unless it's a piece of genius, doesn't really work for me. If it says something brilliant, then there's a guy called Mark Riccioni, who's a car photographer, who has somehow managed to buy a number plate that says lasagna on it. and he had it on a Ferrari 360. And it just, I mean, it's the best number plate I've ever seen in a car. It's brilliant. Mark's a clever guy, and I love that. So that's about the only personalised plate I can deal with. Anyone that needs to try and spell an approximation of their name, anyone that feels the right, have the word boss on there, all of that stuff can fuck off. I just can't deal with it. I don't get it. I'm sorry. Thank you for that. I just don't really get it. But, you know, there are plates that I think do look really good on cars. And I have, for my sins, got one on my car, but that's for a slightly different reason. And I think I'm not universally against them at all. I think it's one of the things that's getting it right is so difficult. I'm scared that I won't get it right. Therefore, I'd rather just leave it well alone and have a normal number plate on it. But maybe you guys are braver than me. So, Neil Clifford, you've got a few of these things. What are your thoughts?
I'm very conscious that it's very evidently quite narcissistic, whatever that word.
You just say.
That word is when you you'd eat yourself if you could type person. I think that there is quite a lot attached to it, isn't there? If you get it wrong, you're really way off the mark. You look quite a tit. I think that's true. But I get joy from them, not just that I've got a few, or I study the type of plate. Not about money, really. It's the joy of buying that £199 plate off of regtransfers.co.uk because you want an ageless plate for an old car and you want it just to, you know, that Mercedes 6.3 estate, one of one that I bought off collecting cars. I wanted an age-related plate. It's on an H, but I just wanted the number 63 on it because it's debadged. So the 6.3 badge is not there. The original owner, McAlpine, took the badge off because he didn't want to show off to his fellow workers that it was a 6.3. So, and I wanted the little nudge to a 6.3 without having to put the badge back on.
Yeah, that's clever.
Yeah, so as some of you know, even when there's an original plate, I go back and find the original dealer, the Audi that was bought in the Glasgow dealership in 1993. And I've got an amazing chap who makes me that plate with the original font and the original 1993 phone number in Glasgow with the original logo that you can find it on Google. I do that weird shit. So for me, it's not about just owning a crazy expensive thing or a flash thing. I certainly don't do the name and all that malarkey. I just think it's another thing you can think about for hours, which I find fascinating.
Manish, what do you think about these things?
The last thing I say is, all, you know, all those plumbers with flush and bog and all that. I love all that. It gives me joy. There's a mobile toilet place about a mile from my house. I leave my house at 5 a.m. to go to work. And this guy in his lorry full of bogs leaves at the same time. And his number plate is shit bog. And I... Every single morning,
it can't literally be shit bog. What does it
like? Made it into shit bog.
H-I-T. I can see.
We had a Dick Lovett customer with pig shit and bitch.
Yeah. Every single. It makes me laugh, and anything that makes you laugh, laughter is just one of the best. Sod taking antidepressants. Just fucking laugh more.
Yeah. Hear, hear.
Manish, what do you think about these things?
Maybe the greatest thing about this podcast is you can change your mind. And I just have in the last 3 minutes. I've gone from baseball bat wielding to kind of like more. I mean, Edward has explained that basically get the right number plate and it's your Bitcoin, isn't it? You bought it for whatever and it's now worth whatever. I know my sister's registration plate, she is a GP, a sick doctor. I don't know how she did it, but it is actually, it makes me laugh. It's great. Sick doctor. Didn't a registration plate, I think 888 is owned by somebody from Hong Kong. Didn't that
will be, yeah. That's, yeah.
Scary.
Sick doctor is S15KDR.
Something like that. I mean, it is actually just hilarious. Listen, it makes you laugh if you're obsessed. Neil, I can't believe that you've managed to find someone who can find the exact font.
No, I find the font.
That's insane.
It gives me something else to do. So I can find the font. I can find the phone number. I can find the dealership, the address, everything. Retro plates on Instagram is amazing. And it'll make anything for you.
Okay, I just did that. So
obviously, not to drive on the road. They're show plates. Don't drive them on the road.
Sorry, I was going to say, I got the slight reverse relationship to Chris there, because Chris is trying to kind of, in some Freudian way, please his father by disapproving of these things. My dad had a Mercedes and it's registered, because California, you can, if they don't exist, you can get them made up.
Yeah.
So his Mercedes had the really unegotistical plate of Panday. And it just... California, P-A-N-D-E-Y. I've got a photo of that. I will share it with you guys later. And my stepmother, who had the BMW, the green 535 I was telling you about, she came from a place in India called Coorg, and he got her the registration plate Coorg, C-O-O-R-G. And that's the thing about that country. If it doesn't exist, you can actually apply for it, and they'll make it up.
Yes, it's $75 or something like that.
Some ridiculously small numbers.
Don't you like seeing really shitty old cars with a monstrously cool number plate?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm told it's an inheritance tax wheeze, but don't tell anyone.
What? Keeping the number plate on the car?
Yeah.
Then you don't. And then, yeah, you've got to be careful with that. Just if the car fails to get an MOT or something or gets written off, then you've got a problem.
Then you lose it.
Yeah.
I saw today December DEC 26 on a Fiat 500. You know, that's got to be a 30 grand plate, isn't it, on a 2 grand car?
I'll give you 2 grand for it.
And I think within there is definitely some consistency there. People that have got incredible collections of cars do tend to put the most valuable number plate on the most unlikely car, and I do like that. You know, if you've got, I remember Ford Motor Company UK have one car. That's quite a valuable number
plate. That's a good car. That's good.
And sometimes it would suddenly appear on a Ford Ka or something as a press car out of nowhere. You'd be given this thing to drive and you think everyone knows the number plate is worth 30 times the value of the car.
Yeah.
So I did quite like that. Chris Cooper, number plates.
When I was a wee bairn and my brother and I were into dinghy racing when we were little, I remember being driven by, so it must have been 15, 16. We were driving up the A74 in southern Scotland towards Largs, which is on the Firth of Clyde, a very big sailing place, to go in some dinghy world championships when we were 15, 16. And we were in my father's Granada Mark II, 2-litre L, which we were quite pleased with at the time. And then whizzing past us went, it would have been an early 930 red 911 turbo.
Nice.
With the number plate TUR80.
Oh.
And to me, and it was when you could get away with no spaces, it just said turbo. The end.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
The end. It's just, so I totally get that, you know, I mean, how much would that be? So, Eduardo, how much would that be now, TUR80?
100 grand, 150 grand.
It must be more than that, surely. Anyway,
wouldn't it? Yeah, 100, 75 to 100. I'm really good at guessing these prices. We should have a competition on prices.
Okay, so if by some bizarre chance the person who owns currently TUR80, then do let us know what consideration you might be interested in the marketplace.
The value is obviously quite specific. Numbers after are worth more than numbers before.
And yeah, but when they make a word, I mean, there's only one turbo, isn't there? So
yeah, but the lowest A, obviously single digit, and
yeah, there used to be, I'm sure some of you have seen this, to be and not to be.
Yeah, that's still parked on the embankment. Yeah,
on the I thought it was on the embankment. It was
Range Rover and a Vanquish.
Yeah. Right, and an Aston, yeah. When I used to drive in, when I worked in the offices in London, you drive in down the A4, go down to the embankment, all the way, just on the left, just before one of the bridges.
That's a brilliant combination.
That's really clever, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the most important thing, I mean, so I'm a bit like Monkey, actually. I'm a sort of, I do have one. I don't like, on the current structure of number plates, I don't like the September version of the plates, 71, 72, they just look wrong. The 1st of March ones, 8, 9, 10, that's fine. Aesthetically, it looks fine. The big numbers look like cue plates to me.
Oh, don't talk about cue plates.
No, I know, we'll do that some other time. Because that'll just go wrong. So my sausage has got a personalized number plate on it, largely because I didn't want it to have a 71 on it.
That's why.
But the most emotional thing for me is my dad's number plates.
Yep.
860 GLK.
Where is it?
God knows. It's a Daimler 250. It was in the 70s, early 70s. He had a Daimler 250, which
have
he
you
bought
searched 80... for it? Have you searched?
No, it's a good question. I'll do it afterwards. 860 GLK. His first proper company car was a Ford Consul in Fern Green, Ford Consul Estate, TKN 281N. Then he had a first of the Mark II Granadas, WKJ849S. Then he had a Granada gear, 2.8 carbureted, not an eye, smaller wheels, 2.8 Granada in, I think, Bahama Gold, I think, with chocolate.
Good man.
GKN77V. Then he had a Rover SD1, RKM113W. Then a facelift SD1, which was JDD, that's really irritating me now, something. No, sorry, A297JDD.
This really has become therapy. I love it. It's brilliant.
A297JDD. And then that was his last company car before he retired. He was quite young, or he was an older father. But those, I can't remember almost any of the number plates I've had, because, you know, we all have had more cars than our parents did. But those are the numbers. I agree with that.
Yeah,
I can see them.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget them.
The number plate that I have on my Tuttle car is the I had that. My father bought it for me, I think, I must have been just after I was born, and he had it on my grandmother's car. So it was on my grandmother's car for until I was 17. And then it went on to my first car, my Nissan Sunny 1.4 LX. And 25 years later or whatever, it's still on my cars.
Why is the year wrong? Therapy if your father's registration plate is GAY777L on a blue Capri. I grew up in that.
Especially
when your dad's been married four times and basically his hobby was shagging more than nurses.
This is why they're so good. Number plates.
Registration plate. I mean, for God's sake.
If anyone has CUN7, let me know. I'll buy that and I might lend it to a few people I don't like.
Dear me. Right. Okay. Let's move on. Where are we? Next subject.
Are we going to cut one of these off, or what do you think? How...
Yeah, let's cut off. We're going to cut off the one after this. We're not going to do Japanese thing on a Japanese car.
That's good, because I was going to embarrass myself.
Okay, so we're going to do silliest boots. I'm going first because I suspect someone else is going to do this one. But it still annoys me that the Ferrari SF90 doesn't have a boot. I don't think the car has been a massive sales success. I don't think it's a residual success now. And for all its cleverness, it deserves not to be a success if it doesn't meet the basic requirements of being a motor vehicle. That is, to be able to take the luggage or carry the luggage of the two people that are sitting in it to go on that journey. I just don't understand why you'd invent... It's like inventing a car with missing a wheel or a gearbox. It's quite an important thing for me. And I think as Neil Clifford, a man who might have been on the list to buy one of those cars that didn't, might feel quite smug because he did the right thing in not buying that car. It doesn't it has no usable luggage space. You can't go on adventures on it. And a car that can't be used for adventures is no longer a car.
There's no car around.
Yeah.
I had SF90 written down and I've said there surely wins. However, it doesn't even have a boot, so I'm not sure you can refer to it as a boot at all.
Yeah.
I remember selling Maserati Quattroportes new back in the day that obviously some people asked, like, could I have a look at the boot, please? Can I see if the boot? And obviously you're selling them a large four-door saloon and they're currently driving an S-Class and thinking they might fancy something Italian and exotic. Well, yes, it's got a boot, but it had a... I'm not sure if you'd even remember, but for a large four-door saloon, you'd barely fit a single set of golf clubs in there. It was totally...
Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I have to give a special mention to my Polestar 1, which, because it has a lovely display case for the flux capacitor cables and all the special electronics at the back there, really doesn't have a boot. I mean, I can't get one set of golf clubs in it. I have to take the driver out, and it weighs 2.3 tons. So and the other one is the B, whatever it is, B3 Audi AT90. The one that was shaped like a bar of soap. My father had two of these because it had a transverse, no, it had a longitudinal 500 engine that hung out the front, but so it could have loads of rear legroom. But they decided that they wouldn't really fit it with a boot for reasons of styling. And then the Quattro one had a diff underneath the boot floor. So what you were left with I mean, it was nothing. I remember trying to go up to Heathrow Airport as a kid, and I'd had a suitcase on my lap always because it wouldn't go in the fucking boot. Who else has strong feet?
You say that, and the thing about the Quattroporte, I know this is podcast the people territory. Bentley Morzan, the first time you open the boot of one of those, you think, where's the rest of it?
Well, in that case, there are a full-size spare. There's also two umbrellas. And in between the seats, you've got the fridge to hold the champagne flutes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's lots of practical
and
stuff.
There's a big fuel tank because the Austin Allegro doesn't get the award for the worst boot because the rest of the car is so shit. It's still trailing the rest of the car under worst award criteria.
They were bad.
Mini convertible. The BMW Mini convertible had that boot lid. It lifted up like that.
Yes.
Rather than being like the original Issy Goens one like that, which had a little picnic tent. It did that. And you think, you've got to be a midget person to be able to get down there to be sort of hands and knees. But I think the prize goes to F-type convertible. Only thing you can fit in that effectively is plasticine. And you'd come out with a perfect mold of the worst boot ever. I mean, what the frigging frig were they thought about when they... I mean, the thing weighs more than Mars. It's such a heavy car. I like them. I think it's with the V8, the SVR's gone silly. And the Runout 450, which is a lightly supercharged 5-litre V8, a bit more tasteful. But the boot, literally, you could put plasticine or marshmallows in it, but you get... No, that is...
Useless.
Really ran out of ideas.
Neil Clifford, you probably own the vehicle that you think has got the silliest boot. I've got a funny feeling it'd be one of your own cars.
Well, see, the specific question is silliest boot, not worst boot.
Yes.
Yeah, and if I don't answer this honestly, a lot of my friends will say, you should have said what you really felt. So I have to approach these things with due honesty. I went to a lovely place in Italy called Maranello to order a lovely car. And my strategy was to do lovely posy blue, because that's my colour. I love that colour. It's very sort of understated and no one obviously knows it's a car from that brand because it's blue. But I wanted to do red leather. I had this obsession with red leather. And when I got there and we had the discussion, and even whilst before you've had the glass of champagne and, you know, they get you very drunk, so you order loads of shit you don't need, I'm like, actually, this is not going to work. Red leather is going to be too much on this car. It's going to be a mistake. I'm going to have to really tone it down. I want the blue. And therefore, we didn't do any red leather. But at that point, one has had a couple of glasses of champagne and you're going off to the pasta place over the road and having a lovely lunch with the man. And the Matthew has come with you, actually. So Matthew Beard is there making sure you've drunk about four bottles of champagne at this point. So then you go back and you're still having these discussions about the red leather. So then he's, oh, fuck it. Do the boot in full red leather. So I actually have a car that's posy blue with a dark, I think it's an Alcantara, and, you know, very chic inside. But when you open the boot is fully lined in red leather. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever done. And therefore, to me, it has to be the silliest boot of a car that I've made.
It's a good distinction between just simply crap and worst.
Yes. Really,
and not worst, yeah.
Silly.
It's still a better boot than an SF90 because it's a boot.
It's a boot.
But it's silly.
Under the heading of silly leather linings to one end of the vehicle, am I recalling correctly that Singer would sell you a car with leather?
They have a
That's
leather.
How they come as standard. Quilted leather engine bay.
A leather engine bay.
Yep.
They don't get fire either.
Am I missing something?
No, it's cool.
Yeah, you are. You need to get a Singer. They're bloody great.
Also, leather has quite good sound deadening quality, so it actually works quite well.
Someone sold one on here just before they really rocketed in price.
Oh, did they? Who was that?
Oh,
stop it. Talk about something else.
He doesn't call it. He just refers to the car as Monaco.
Yes,
I was driving Monaco.
I'm like,
how do you drive a principality?
I haven't even got wheels. The same pun.
I always think to myself, how did he drive a principality? It's not even got wheels. Right,
you couldn't get Monaco, but I got MON4CO. Is that right? Monaco. Yeah, MON4CO.
That's good.
Okay, Manish. Silliest boot. I reckon it's going to be 70s and wedge shaped.
No. I just actually got two silly boots. One unapproachable, the other one unaffordable. The unaffordable, it's a Mura boot. You can get a credit card in there. That's it. It just flips up, and there's that little thing, and that's it. Literally, you're not even an umbrella.
Like that.
Just at a practical level, I was looking 2 years ago for a BMW 5 Series Touring, and I looked at the electric one. And as you know, I have the ID A4 Avant. It needs to be able to. The reason why I wanted to get an estate is because the dog needs to go in the back and cricket bags and all the rest of it. And its boot or its cargo area is smaller
than the right up,
because of the battery. It's got a 70 kilo battery. So basically, it just literally, it's a butt. I don't get it. I don't get
it.
It was very silly, and I wouldn't buy it for that exact reason. You can't get a bigger car with much less storage capacity. That makes no sense. And if you don't drive it a lot, I'd basically be lugging a 79-kilo battery everywhere I go.
Ballast,
I'm just going to have to go and put my children to bed. I will be back momentarily.
Yes.
The Americans say.
Joe's commitment to the cause. Edward's still here, despite the fact that he's got to put Nippers to bed. So we're going to move on to, in his absence, what car maker has your favourite naming strategy? This is a thorny issue. This could go on for some time. I'm going to move to Neil Clifford, and I'm going to say you're limited to 24 minutes.
Well, I think they have to be words, not numbers.
What?
Ooh,
there you go.
Where does it say that?
Whoa.
Because, you know, even though we love...
Put the brakes on, Bobby.
And the 5 Series and 7 Series or the Mercedes S. I don't like the initials, or the Germans do it badly. That's the first thing I want to say. Because it's they're all...
Who has taken Neil Clifford? Can we have the
they're
real
all exactly. logical. There's
Can
no
we have Neil
emotion.
Back? Can we have they're Neil all, back?
They're all left-brain, logic-y people. I think you need the right brain, creative people that sit there for hours smoking gear. What amazing emotional word can we find? So on the basis that you're either as a numbers and lettersy logical person or you're a words and emotion and right brain person, I'm on that side. And therefore,
why can't you be both?
Well, because it's sort of impossible. Or your name's Steve Jobs and, you know, you can...
No one wants that, yeah.
Can I pose the question?
Yes.
Is it possible, if you're a genius, to be able to create that emotional response, but in a number?
I don't think that's very easy.
Well, let's find
out.
But
when you see 250, what do you think?
Well, I think Ferrari do it both, because they mainly use words.
275?
I think Ferrari mainly uses numbers.
No.
Particularly in the 275 Ferrari.
Rosa, Enzo, LaFerrari. They're much more emotional than the numbersy logical stuff.
Yeah, not that ugly 275 then.
No, well, no, because I've sold it.
If you write 250 GTO on paper, I mean, it's quite. It's
no,
got
but,
a thing about it.
No, can I just give my fucking answer?
Sorry, yeah.
So. In that logic, I would either go Bentley, I would go Rolls-Royce. I think those lovely emotional Silver Shadow, Camargue, Corniche, they typify all these beautiful places or emotional situations. Yeah. So that's where I am. I'm words, not numbers, because I'm right brain, not left brain.
Okay. Ed would love it. What's your favourite naming strategy for a car brand?
I found this difficult because I'm not sure what I find, but it's clearly become quite challenging for these manufacturers to do it. I think Ferrari have always done a pretty good job with theirs until they got to Pura Sangue, and they've clearly fucked it all up now because that's just a ridiculous name.
Yeah.
BMW obviously always used to just follow engines, and it was the actual size of those engines. And then they lost the plot and started naming them things that actually didn't relate to the size of the engine. Yeah. So that made it very difficult. And then I went back to look at AC, because you know I like a Cobra. But AC's first car was the AC Light car. And then they did an AC6, and then an AC Ace, and then an AC Ace Bristol. And then they did things like an AC Le Mans and an AC Targa Florio. So it's sort of named after what it did. And Bentley, it was a Bentley 3 litre and a 4.5 litre and a blower. So it sort of just said what it did on the tin. I quite like that. It's obviously far more challenging now to be able to do that. And was it Peugeot that owned the rights to having an O in the middle of their names?
Yeah.
And I think they challenged Porsche on it, didn't they?
That's why the 901.
It would have been the 901.
Yeah, Porsche had to change their naming strategy to not have an O or a zero in between it.
So what's your favourite?
I don't have a favourite. Is that all right?
Okay. Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Manish?
I think I've never been in the Neil camp harder. I think it's all about words. And I think there are two car companies for a small period of time that named their cars more beautifully than anyone else. The first one was Lamborghini, in naming them after bulls or bull-like areas. So Mura, Espada, Islero, Jarama, Uraco. And Uraco is a little bull. So I think it's beautiful. But I think one company has done it even better. And it's Maserati naming them after exotic winds.
After Fletcher.
So I think wind, erotic.
Wind, exotic wind, no.
Erotic wind, no. Exotic wind, so Mistral, Ghibli, Camzin, Merak, Bora.
These are just
beautiful names. And
what meteorological phenomena is Ghibli?
It's that's in, believe it or not, I think that's an English patient. The Ghibli, and it's a desert wind, the Ghibli.
Okay.
And there was just one little thing, that the four-seaters, they named them after circuits. And I think they picked rather beautiful, Sebring, Mexico, Indy, and Kyalami.
Lovely.
Which circuit is Quattroporte?
No. It's a corner.
I think it's hard to disagree with that. And also... As a language, Quattroporte just sounds wonderful. You know, if I launched the Ford four-door, people wouldn't think it was that sexy. So I think I can buy into that. Right, Chris Cooper.
I mean, at one level, there is literally only one winner of this.
Oh, God.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Skoda.
Oh, okay, let's go.
The Skoda Abominable Snowman.
The Yeti.
That's lovely.
Kodiak. Big scary bear.
Roar.
It's not my favorite. I actually think I'm going to let Monkey have a go at BMW. The reason why I like BMW is because I 3 Series, 5 Series, so you just knew until quite recently what you're going to get. But actually, I think, and actually I'm with you on this one, Neil, because we're a broad church. And I think you're right with Rolls-Royce. Merlin.
It's emotional.
Merlin, Avon, Trent, Pegasus, Viper, Olympus.
Lovely engines.
Silver Mist. Which
those
was,
are all
which obviously was never sold in the silver market because that means silver shit.
Yeah. So I think Rolls-Royce, whether it's cars or aero engines, a lot of them obviously English or British rivers, Trent, Spey, Tyne, no. But Merlin, Pegasus, Viper, Olympus. It's a winner. That's my favorite.
Okay. I can buy into that, but you know where I'm going with this. So I am completely the opposite. For me, it's all about the late 70s, the whole of the 80s, and the early 90s in a country called Germany. And it's two car manufacturers. It's Mercedes-Benz and BMW. Somehow managed to make someone my age literally fall about on the road like I'd seen the second coming, because there was a number that was slightly different to another number on the back of a car.
Mm-hmm.
The first time from the rear, I saw a 750i on the road. And I thought, I hadn't seen the squared exhaust pipes. I just saw 750 rather than 735. And the fact that someone had added 15 to someone who is totally dysnumeric and it sent me wild was everything. And I love the way that BMW, particularly BMW for me, that just if you saw this badge, you'd go, oh my God, 5.3. I thought it was a 5.25. It's a 5.28. It's a 5.35.
Yeah.
It's 5.40. And it's I think Mercedes-Benz as well. There was something about the Mercedes-Benz naming that was even more conservative. So when you did see something different, like when you saw your first 500E, it was like, my God, this is a spaceship. And of course, the first time we had the long badged, when they did this 24 valve engine, the inline six, and the coupe was badged 300CE-24. That ruined it for me because it didn't fit the strategy.
No, that was trying too hard.
It stepped outside of the logic for me.
Trying too hard.
Yep. I loved it. And I think also the idea that so much of, we discussed the rear headrests in cars, the aspirational points. For me, there was so much aspiration attached to these to these numbers on the back of cars. They meant so much.
And the W123, the wagon, because most of them were a 200
or 230.
Or a 230 TE.
Yeah.
But then once in a blue moon, and you saw 280 TE.
Yeah,
How tingly did that make you feel?
And even though it's shameful to admit that you'd go there, you'd think, what's the rest of their life like?
Yeah.
Where do they go on holiday? They must smell different. You know, these people must be spectacular.
They might have two televisions in their home.
And this is based on someone adding three digits or three numbers to one.
Weird, number. Isn't it?
I just don't understand how they made it work.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
And BMW back in the 80s, when I used to go to Western Counties, which then became part of the Dick Lovett Empire, that you'd get the brochures, and each brochure for 3, 5, and 7 would just list the models on the front, and it would go 318, 320, and then 323i. And they'd be the badges were perfectly lit with little sparkles that would come off where the lighting in the studio. They built my dreams. So I'm afraid I like a 612 Scaglietti, and I like, but you can, they can all go hang. I love Giulietta, Giulia. I love all those names, but there's something about German defined numbers that just totally captivated me.
Yeah.
So I'm sad. I know I'm sad, but I can't help it.
I love it.
Right. Here we go. You have bought or built your dream house. and have negotiated a space for one automotive or motorsport component or artifact. The budget, much like the two-car garage from last week, that wasn't acknowledged by every addict, is limitless. What do you choose? Chris Cooper, let me just repeat that for you. The budget is limitless.
Do you think I didn't spot that?
One thing, Christopher.
I've got one answer. I've got one answer. So I talked about it with the boys, and they said a great idea would be to get the Ferrari Pratt perch from the Formula One pit wall and have that converted into a bar. So where all the screens are, you'd have like hand pumps for stuff. But that's not my answer. And I then thought about, I quite like Spa, the circuit. But that's not my answer either.
Oh, you can fit that in the backyard.
It just says one, you've negotiated space for one automotive motorsport component or artifact. The budget is limitless. I don't know what constraints you're thinking, Edward.
You've already given us two answers. Carry on.
Then I thought, I'm going to have the Ferrari factory. the whole fucking thing. But you know, that's not the answer either.
I'm going to have
Italy. I'm going to have Italy. Because it's got the Ferrari factory, it's got the Zonda factory, it's got those God's own roads, it's got friendly policemen, it's got the food of the planet.
So you can have a little drive on your roof in the evening.
On a limitless budget, the one automotive and motorsport artifact I'm going to have is Italy.
Unbeatable. Neil Clifford, beat that.
No, it's pretty unbeatable. But in last week's podcast...
what a week it's been.
Yeah, exactly. What have you done this week
since the last podcast?
It feels like yesterday. We talked about passengers. And the best and most legendary passenger of all time was a guy called Dennis Jenkinson, who did the Mille Miglia with Stirling Moss.
He wants the rolling thing.
Bog roll.
In 1955, and did it in, 100 miles an hour, 10 hours, 1,000 miles. And they did it. A lot of the reason they did it is because Dennis built a cassette machine that held their pace notes, and it whirled around, and he sat there for 10 hours putting sweets, which was my only job for my wife, putting sweets into Stirling Moss's mouth. If you read all that big, beautiful article that he wrote about doing the whole thing. And he had no fear because he raced sidecars, right, Dennis? So he's got bull. Yeah, he's a professional sidecar guy.
Is he a passenger or the rider?
I think he was a passenger because he was about 1 foot tall. And if you look at all the photographs. But so he's got balls of steel, and he made this amazing machine that meant that they knew exactly where they were going the whole time. And whatever this thing costs, I probably was sold at auction 20 years ago for like 1,500 quid. I'd have that. That's my favorite thing. In
That's
the world.
A very cool thing.
Neil, do you know who Jenks' favourite driver was of all time?
I should, but I don't.
Senna.
It was Senna.
Was it?
Mm.
I mean, he lived down in Winchester with no electricity or water, didn't he? He lived like Stig of the Dump.
Yes.
Yeah.
That weasel.
Yeah.
Edward Lovett.
I don't have one answer, but I've got a few things here. Chris,
no, you can only have one answer.
Chris is obviously, I've got one answer. Yes, a bit like you. Anyway, yours was brilliant, so congratulations.
So congratulations.
Over there, well done.
I think I would love one of those sort of plastic Ferrari Testarossa bed frame, so I could see my son at 4 years old sleep in one of them. I never had one of those beds. I think I'd quite like to put him to bed in one of those.
So
whilst he doesn't look at me like, what the fuck is this? You made me slip. And if I'm not careful, it'll be too late and I won't be able to do it. I went to Sir Terence Conran's house about 15 years ago near Hungerford. And I'll find a picture of this and put there. They've recently all been sold. He passed away
two
years ago. But he had these beautiful blue children's pedal Bugattis on the hallway of his house. He had about 8 or 10 of them lined up. And as you walked into the house, this hallway, it was just... So it was just creative and it looked brilliant.
He's a stylish dude.
He is a super stylish dude.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I have seen Formula One cars on the walls and ceilings of people's houses. And that's always quite an impressive thing in an atrium or a living room or a man's cave. But I just think I sort of wrote that down, but actually just don't think it's interesting enough. But maybe, which I believe this car lives, what used to live when I saw it underneath our favourite Porsche dealer in Stade, in the -5 in their secret storage there, which was Ferrari chassis number 001, effectively.
Right.
I think that would be, and it's a tiny little...
Oh, he's gone.
He'd be back.
Well, I'm gonna get a photo of that for posterity, because it's a good one.
Oh.
There he's gone. Oh, he's back.
Are you there?
No, we lost you there, but we got a cracker of your forehead.
Yeah.
Right, carry on.
No, fine. I'm not sure where you lost me, but
Ferrari 001 chassis.
Yeah, that would be nice. And then clearly, if I ever wanted to use Italy, I'd just pop around to my mate's house and play around.
You're always
backyard.
Welcome. You're always welcome.
Manish, what are you going to have?
My dream drawing room would have a fantastic piano in it, not because I can play, because my son can, next to massive windows looking over the beautiful greenery of Belsize Park. And just next to it, I'd have a single... I hate overhead lights, except for this. I'd have a single overhead spotlight. Makes a tiny cone, approximately 18 inches wide, and sort of chest high, there'd be an absolutely black plinth. And on it would be Senna's 1985 Bell helmet from winning his first Grand Prix, the Portuguese Grand Prix.
Yep.
Bell helmet. It says John Player Special on it. It's got the Renault blue thingy, Nacional, and just the little bell, and that's all. And that would be the most... I've seen it. It does exist. It's in the museum or the family's sort of special shrine to him, really, in Sao Paulo. And it is just the yellow. It's beautiful, sort of like a limey yellow. It really contrasted so beautifully with that car. It is just the most iconic thing for me in motor racing ever.
Well, it's yours, Manish. There you go. The best thing is all of these things are given to us now.
Yeah.
And it's been a struggle buying Chris Cooper Italy, but we've managed to negotiate a deal. So I would say, we discussed it a couple of weeks ago. I have a racing car with my name on it in the Porsche Museum. I'd quite like to have that. But actually, it's just, if you invite the few people that you still like or that like you into your house or converted barn or stately home or flat, and the first thing they see is a picture, the first thing they see is a racing car with your name on the side of it. It's a bit cockish, isn't it? I mean, you can't really get away with that. So there's one thing that I've always viewed on a racing circuit that has always made me feel good. And it's a tiny little sign on a long racing circuit in Germany. And it's a marker board on the outside of the last real corner at the Nordschleife.
Yeah,
and it signifies two things. It signifies this is the longest circuit you'll ever drive. And it signifies, well, three things. It signifies you need to turn in now. If you don't turn in now, you're going to be on the wrong line. And it also signifies you've just completed another lap and you're not dead. And the number on it is 186. And when you reach 186 at the Nürburgring, You have to turn in. If you don't turn in before 186, you will enter the Dottingerhoe, the long straight at the end. You'll enter it in the wrong place and crash. So I want that 186 board. And I don't care where it goes in my house. It could be somewhere significant. It could just sit in the kitchen. It could just sit somewhere. As long as I can see it, it's a bit like, it's like the half of a fire for me. Just there. There's something comforting about 186. If you ever gone there, the 186 board is the most special motorsport board. And it's about that big. It's not very big at all.
And what, right is the 186? What is the 186?
It's, well, there's a mark. There are the Nordschleife is punctuated by these marker boards, and they're numbered, and they obviously go up when they're running around. And some of them, when you learn it, some of them are obvious on your sight line. That's the turning point. Although the turning point, but you're looking over there, and the thing's there. 186 is as you come out of the Kleiner carousel, the little carousel, and you sort of wind up to it. The road rises a bit. It's a double apex right hander, and you look at that sign, and you think, that's the most evocative description of that circuit I've ever heard. I trade Italy for that.
But 186, honestly, when you go, if you race there a lot, 186 just says,
totally.
Well, another one under my belt, didn't hurt myself, and I'll take 186.
And it's a really satisfying, because if you get that right,
and you
make the apex, and you can feel it, you can feel where I take in the car we used to race, fifth gear, And then you get towards the gantry where the big Audi sign is. You know you've got it right, and you know when you saw that sign back there. I think that's really. Oh, I love it.
I'll have 186. In fact, I might make a fake 186. I don't know. Am I allowed to make a fake?
Go and nick it.
We can't go and nick it because it's part of the. I can't do that.
You get a personal number plate with 186 written on it, like we talked about last week.
Yeah, that seems so long ago.
There's a touch of the imp about you, Neil Clifford. I like that jumper. You weren't wearing that an hour ago.
Your man could knock that up for Chris. He could knock that up for Chris.
Yeah. We're going for our two-car garage. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah.
This is sent in by Max Jelly. Is that a real name? Max Jelly?
Stephen Jelly, isn't that? We've raced with.
Okay. It's 1995 and you're a successful American banker living a double life in Tokyo. By day, you need a car to be driven in that will impress both your clients and the general public. But be careful. This is the heyday of the Yakuza, and a large black limousine may give off the wrong impression. By night, you're an avid drifter and need a competitive yet discreet car to smoke the competition without being recognised. There are no practical concerns at all and no budget, so feel free to explore tuning possibilities. Yes, baby. I'm going to go first with Edward Lovett.
So last week, I talked about the Toyota Century, but obviously now we're shopping in 1995. So I'm going to go back to 1995 and I'm going to buy a Toyota Century. I think that's the right low-key car for an executive banker to be driven around Tokyo in.
V12?
V12. And then my drift car is also going to be a Toyota Century. There is such a thing, as you can imagine, because the Japanese do like to modify. So I found a 1,017 brake horsepower at 9,000 RPM V12 Toyota Century drift car. And I think that will be perfect. It'll match almost exactly like the road car. It'll be slightly lowered with a bit more tow to do whatever you need to do to make these things drift. I did watch a few videos this afternoon of these guys. They are so fucking cool.
I agree.
Chris Cooper.
Well, in yet more evidence that I am an agricultural rural simpleton, I had to ask what Yakuza was. I didn't know what it was. So I spoke with, this would have been earlier last week when we started looking at this. And I said, what is Yakuza? And Cameron said, it's a bit like MS-13, Dad. What's that? Apparently that's a Colombian version of Yakuza or Sinaloan cartel. Anyway, so once I was tuned in to the vernacular, I too ended up with, well, we are torn between An S600 or 600 SEL V12, Der Panzerwagen, or actually, I really like the idea of a Century V12 for my wafting wagon. The drifting one, though, is slightly more, a bit more a collector's choice. I think you'd have, because you're a successful American banker living a double life in Tokyo. You just don't care. You've gone mad. You've had more stuff through your head and your nostrils than anyone. You're just living. I think you'd have a 964 turbo wound up to a million horsepower.
Nice. Yeah.
I think it's the most it'd be the most difficult thing to drift.
Yeah, you'd be
an American banker. You are a master of the universe. You think the world revolves around you, and you think, I'm not going to have one of those specially, actually, it's a bit easier than people think to drift one of those things with the special racks and the special weighting of the corners and stuff. No, I'm going to have a 964 turbo with more lag than God.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Manish.
I think I am terrified of the Yakuza. I don't know if you have you seen, has anybody here seen The Predator?
Yes.
Where all the it's the one where all the assassins arrive on a planet. They're all sort of dodgy. They all come various ways. And you know, so one of them is a Yakuza, and there's a great line. He just he holds his hand up, and you realize he's got all these fingers missing, and he's not spoken. And they go, "Where are your fingers?" And he goes, "I talk too much." That's it. That's why he's lost his fingers, because he talks too much. And he had said nothing. So these are scary people. And I think you need two cars, which are both going to be pretty incognito, because you don't want to be kidnapped by the Yakuza. So I would actually get, it's 1995, going to use the A word, but I would get an Audi A8, the D2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd get that with inscriptions withheld. I'd get that a gorgeous navy blue, very, very dark leather of some description, so not the red stuff that I mentioned last week for my Monteverdi. And I think you could be driven around in that. I'd have some curtains at the back. That's what I would do. So you couldn't see that I was an American investment banker. And people do that in Japan. And to drift, I think there is only one car, and it would have to be a black Mazda RX-7, the FD3S. That is a drifting car. I had a little look at these. I'll tell you what, you've got two options with the engine. I think you either put a massive Garrett turbocharger on this twin blade rotary engine. And they were saying they can produce 550, 600, even more than that horsepower. But it's that big. And you have to do all kinds of other bits and pieces to it. Or the alternative is to put an LS3 crate engine into that. So you can do that, put a Chevy block into it. Either of those things, this thing, it's black, just drive it down the road, no one noticed.
Nice.
But you turn up at night.
I think I can see where you're going there, but I reckon if you dodge the Yakuza in your Audi, once they find out that you've probably put a crate engine in a rotary Mazda, they'll be on you. They wouldn't even bother trying to sell you back to your family. They just chop you up and throw you in the river, mate. Neil Clifford.
If I'm an American banker in Tokyo, I'm going to risk a little bit this Yakuza thing. I want an American car. I think I miss America. I want a Yankee car. I want a cool Yankee thing. But then I'm like, I can't go too Chevrolet Impala-y, too ridiculous. But Tokyo is like living your life in a magazine. You've got to look cool, and just one of the coolest cities in the world. You've got to be cool. So it's a tricky call. I'm going for an original Jeep Wagoneer.
Yeah.
You know, the wood down the side. Mm. I don't know if it doesn't really fit the description, but bollocks. I just want to be cool in Tokyo, and I want to be American. I think the first series was the best one. They look brilliant. I'd have one of them, probably in the navy, but the tan leather with the wood down the side. Cool thing, cool dash. And then what am I having? I don't know anything about drift cars, actually. I dread to think of what it's like to go drifting. It'd be bloody awful. It'd be sick the whole time. But I'd get a little MX-5 Rocketeer. I went down to see Bruce and Dan in between Winchester and Basingstoke. What an amazing bunch. They'd make you the coolest full-on carbon fiber little MX-5. People wouldn't know it until they heard it with those amazing carbon fiber intakes. You got a V6 engine in it. It's fantastic. You'd rear-wheel drive, which you probably do need on a drift car, not as if I know really, but
you need a spool diff.
Sounds brilliant. Bruce would make it for you totally personally, and it'd be lovely, and that's what I'd have.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I like some of that.
So yeah. I'm a bit torn by this. I thought the American thing as well. But nothing's going to shout kidnap me more than driving around in an American car in Tokyo in 95, is it? I mean, you might as well just walk around with a dollar bill sign on your forehead. So yeah. I'm thinking, you don't want to hide the fact. If you go too far the other way, you're trying too hard and they'll work it out.
Yeah.
So wealthy Japanese businessmen had a penchant for European cars back then. We know they did. But not going too far. I think Manish is onto something there, but I'd go small on them because in Japan, they really seem to recognize the length of the wheelbase. You add 2 inches of the wheelbase, suddenly you're more plutocratic, aren't you? So I think I think 5 Series is the size. So I'm going 5 Series, but I'm gonna have an E34 M5, all right? But I'm gonna rebadge it as a 525i.
And I'm gonna
have it configured with that weird massive armrest in the middle. So it's actually like a limousine in the back with a big bob in the middle. So I've got somewhere for my elbow, and I'm gonna have curtains. I'm gonna worry about the wheels, and I think the wheels might give it away to some people, but I don't think there are many Yakuza that are as sad as BMWs as me. Drifting back then. I think you have to have an AE86, wouldn't you? That's the staple drift car.
It is, yeah.
They are just the most incredible vehicles. That's the Mark II Escort of Japanese.
Corolla, rear-wheel drive Corolla.
Yeah, they're just an amazing car. The engine is effectively a BD, isn't it? It's just their version of BD.
What is the combo that makes a perfect drift car?
I think you've got a longitudinal engined four-cylinder car that is unitary body with a rear-wheel drive axle that's probably a live axle at the back. So that's how it started out. So you could just beast them forever. They've become much more sophisticated now, but you can argue that without the AE86, there would be no drift scene. It's that important. It's a bit like the Mark II has the same power over gravel rallying. It's a remarkable thing. So I think it would have to be one of those. But I think, do you know what? All of us, despite thinking we're clever, we would end up shanked. We'd end up in trouble. There's not one of us that would escape there. Not one.
Yeah. No, that's true.
What way to go, though.
Yeah. Okay, let's do a little bit of music. This week, I'm going to go first. I don't think anyone else is going to nick this, but... So, last week, when we recorded that, feels like days ago, I into female artists. So, I think of another female voice that I find captivating because it's so potent. This is the big block V8 of voices for me from the 80s. That's Alison Moyet. God, she can belt a tune out. Go and listen to Weak in the Presence of Beauty now on your car hi-fi. It's a proper tune. She has got some lungs. Go, Alison. That's for me. Okay, Manish.
She's 6 feet tall, you know that?
Yeah, she can sing. Go on.
Yeah.
No, I just noticed that Chris Cooper's wearing the same shirt as he was last week.
I've got 7 of these.
Very embarrassing.
It's actually the Challenge Consulting uniform. They all have to wear them. Yeah. Right. Manish, your music.
For the second week in a row, I'm going non-classical. And this is the piece of music I would drift to. And it's Lenny Kravitz. Are you going to go my way? You could
that's
really
a good song, yeah.
Very good tune. Right, Ed would love it.
I've been hunting for something that's Japanesey. So I've gone for Tokyo by the Wombats.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, I've heard that in a long time. Yeah. Neil Clifford.
Whatever.
I've been listening to some of my son's current music, trying to make sure that I don't become an old fart of a dad, which is always very, very easy to bloody do, isn't it? And he introduced me to a guy called Lil Yachty, L-I-L-Y-A-C-T-Y. And a new album, the first song called The Black Seminole. And it's really good. It's like Pink Floyd. I'm like, magic. And then we spent an hour talking about modern and old and how music is just all cool, both old and new. So, yeah, stick that on. It's good.
I'll do that tomorrow when I get up very early.
It's good. It's good. Yeah.
Chris Cooper.
Alison Moyet is a really good one. She's kind of the Adele of her time without...
She was, yeah.
She's better. She's miles better.
I think Adele's good. You can't criticise.
I'm not saying she's bad, but Alison Moyet for me is the one.
Amazing, I agree.
Yeah.
So, cool. Like Edward, I've tried to go a bit Japanesey, and there is nothing more Japanesey than the vapors turning Japanese.
Yes. Yeah.
Here we go.
Just ask your mother what it means.
One of us had to do it. Right. That is the end of episode 50. Of the Collecting Addicts podcast, which was recorded in nowhere near the same time as episode 49. We look forward to having you join us for episode 51 next week. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.